Welcome to University Drive, your pathway to the transformational work of University of the Bahamas. Our goal is to build a better Bahamas by shaping tomorrow's leaders today, finding solutions to challenges, and forging new opportunities for growth. University Drive, where faculty, staff, students, and alumni travel the road of progress together with you. Hello, everyone, and welcome to University Drive. I'm your host, Tamika London. Over the 10 seasons of University Drive, we have had so many pace setters, change agents, and innovators join us for healthy discussions about how we can advance further down the road of progress. What does progress look like? How do we inspire collective action? Are we fully using the diverse talents that we have to move the Bahamas towards its best future? We on University Drive have been deliberate about selecting and sharing with you the conversations that matter from the perspectives of those who are making a transformative impact. In this episode, we take you further. In fact, we are going on a trip today to one of the most idyllic islands in the Bahamas, where leadership is centered in part on empowerment through community building. Joining us is an outstanding alum of UB, which has a 50-year legacy of producing leaders for life. He is an engaged citizen, a thought leader, I'd like to say, and something else that makes all the difference in the world, a doer. We have the president and CEO of One Eleuthera Foundation, Kieron Smith. Kieron, welcome. It's been a while.
Well, it sure has, and it's exciting to be back and to just share and learn from you about UB and what's happening. So thank you for having me.
Well, you're quite welcome for being here. But what we're going to focus on is the things that you're engaged with and your journey, not only as an alum, a former student of University of the Bahamas, so that you can serve at your story might actually be inspiring and encouraging for others. And we can use some inspiring and encouraging stories right now.
Sounds good to me.
This is not your first time with us here on University Drive. The last time you were a guest on the show, you were recently graduated and working at your alma mater. A lot has happened since then. Fill us in on what's happened between the last time you were here as a guest up to now.
Oh boy, now you've done it. So much has happened since I was last on the show. One of the things that I enjoyed about the show is it really focused on a lot of the alumni who would have went to the university and just be able to share these stories. But for me, the last time I was there, I just graduated. I ended up transitioning into the president's office after I graduated, working on, you know, a campus sustainability campaign, encouraging persons across the university to utilize sustainable practices in their different areas. So it was a lot of excitement around that, to be able to do that campaign. Also had an opportunity to work in advancement. I'm not sure if I talked about that the last time I was on the show, but that was also an enriching experience for me, being able to work in advancement and as part of the development team for the university to help with some of the fundraising opportunities there. And then also working in the Government and Public Policy Institute as a policy fellow. So doing work there with Chivago Lang in that department has been, you know, an enriching experience for me. Following that, I was able to go off to school in the UK. I studied at the University of Manchester. Kudos to the university that supported me through the journey there as well. I pretty much studied governance and public policy, was able to come back home and make my contributions in the advancement department as well as in the Government and Public Policy Institute. And following that, you know, I was able to move to Eleuthera. I'm from Eleuthera, grew up here. My family's from here. My mother's side of the family's from here. So being able to move to Eleuthera to give back to an organization like One Eleuthera. And my journey's been here for the last 3 years. I started off as a projects and strategic planning manager and worked my way up officially to CEO as of July 1st. So it's been a long journey. An exciting one. And, I'm happy to share a little bit about my stories about that journey, but that's pretty much a synopsis of what I've been through over the last, I would say maybe 4 or 5 years since being on the show.
Wow, kudos and commendations on your recent ascendancy to president and CEO at One Eleuthera Foundation. Thumbs up or thumbs down for higher education?
Thumbs up. And I say thumbs up because, I think my most enriching experience was my experience at University of the Bahamas. And a lot of it came from beyond just the classroom. I just being involved with student government, being able to be a part of the university transition as a student, also following my graduation, being able to contribute in so many ways have really shaped me and have prepared me for the role that I'm in today. From being a part of the board at UB as a student trustee, there were so many experiences that I gained that really helped prepare me for the roles that I was in and that I'm currently in. And so I would say hats off to higher education, and I would encourage anybody to pursue their goals and to pursue higher education if that's the route that they want to take and if they're exploring it.
The organization that you are working with now, a key part of their mission relates to community building. And for a lot of people who aspire to enter the higher education system, right? And that community building, I meant to say, and that community building to me means community support, providing a network of support so that we all rise. For a lot of people who might aspire to enter the higher education system or go to UB, that support might not be there. What are your thoughts about creating an environment of support so that we can encourage more of a bigger pipeline of people to enter higher education and support what for them can emerge to be their success?
I think it really starts with us. It starts with people in the community. It starts with alumni. It starts with the university. It starts with persons who would have experienced higher education, because even when I look at, different schools across the island of Eleuthera, I think exposure is one of the critical things that we can do as a group to support young persons who want to get into higher education. Because, I believe education is one of the major indicators of success. And, just thinking back to being around persons who went to higher education and being able to hear their stories was one of the key things for me when I was going into higher education. I think we have to tell a story, a better story of higher education being beyond just a classroom experience. Not everybody is inclined to be motivated by that. I think for us, we need to get into the schools, because a lot of people in some instances don't recognize higher education as a tool for driven success. And what I mean by that is, sometimes you think about being in an institution for 4 or 5 years to get a degree. That sometimes could be a deterrent. And I think being able to tell the stories of your experience in college beyond the classroom space, I think that'll get a lot more people excited about higher education. I also think when they, I think about my experience in student government, and that sounds boring, student government. I just being able to plan events, and exciting events that young people love to do, that was an experience in itself that made college fun. And I think when we make the thing that sometimes sounds boring and not exciting fun, I think you get more people inspired to want to go. So I do think it takes more support from persons who have had that exposure to really get more young people involved in wanting to explore higher education.
How important is it now for us to coach and mentor our young people to start to develop thoughts about their place and space, not only as a citizen of the Bahamas, but as a contributing citizen of a deeply interconnected world? You went abroad to the UK and you got another higher education degree. What was your motivation there, and how did that impact you in terms of living abroad and bringing back all that you learned from abroad back to the Bahamas, but still operating at a level where you were contributing to nation building and our progress?
I think what drove me to want to go off to school was, well, one, I when I went to UB, my first goal was to be a doctor. I wanted to do medicine until, one day it really hit me. I was in the hospital. I went to see my grandmother, and there were a bunch of beds outside of these rooms. And I was walking past these people, and some of them were putting their hand out and saying, "Hey, can you assist me?" I saw some of the doctors, they had a bunch of patients. So they were walking past some of the patients who were on some of those beds because they were trying to get to other patients. But when I saw that, and then, I walked in a room and I saw blood, and I'm like, "Oh my God, what am I doing here? This might not be the path for me." I was already in my
Reality
third
check,
year.
right?
Yeah, like a reality check. That's another thing about higher education. Like sometimes you start off, doing one thing, and you might realize, hey, as you go through your journey, that you may want to explore other options or other opportunities. But for me, I was, being involved in student government and, the extracurricular activities, I really kind of learned more about myself and what I was passionate about from policy and being able to communicate and drive results from a different standpoint. That made me think about, hey, maybe I should pursue a degree in governance and public policy. And one of the things that I said I would do is I would want to go to a school where our system pretty much in governance and public policy was formed through the British system. So for me, going off to school to do that was important, but also I just wanted to be exposed to a different culture. And going away and to meet people from all over the world, I mean, it was an amazing experience. I was able to make friends from, they were there. I lived in Manchester, which is a very diverse city. And so you had persons from Africa, from Central America, from all those different places. I couldn't find a more enriching experience. And so one of the things for me was when I went there is I love where I love the Bahamas. I love my country, and I believe that if you want to see your country grow, you have to be a part of, you have to make a contribution. So when I went over there, I always saw myself coming back home. And so after I was done, I was happy about the experience. I mean, I made a lot of friends, and was able to really form some good bonds and connections with people there. But coming home was important for me to make my contribution to the country that I'm from and that I love, where I live. I remember walking into a classroom in the UK my first day, and they ask you, "Hey, give your name, say where you're from." And I walk in the classroom, I sit down, so everybody's going around the room saying, "Hey, this is my name, I'm from this place." And I remember it, I remember this clear as day. I sat in the room and I said, "Hi, my name is Kieron Smith and I'm from the Bahamas." And I remember the song in the room when I said that. All you could have heard in the room was, "You choose to come here and you from the Bahamas? Like, we've been trying to get to the Bahamas all our life." I'm like, it's amazing to see sometimes, you're home and you often forget the beauty of what home is like. And so that was a experience of a lifetime. But also what I learned was that even while I was there, I remember my first week or first 2 weeks going into the UK, I said, hey, when the rain stopped, I'll go out and get registered and get my bank account set up. I was inside for like 2 weeks. Just waiting for the rain to stop.
You wanted culture, you wanted a different culture, a different climate too comes along with that.
But in the Bahamas, we believe when the rain when it raining, sometimes the show stop. But that was another culture shift, and one of the things that I think helped me today. Rain don't stop a show. The day keeps on going, so I had to get out in that rain, and it rained every day pretty much. Clouds are gray, and I just grew so much of an appreciation for home. And even on those sunny days, when they had sunny days in the UK, you would look on the parks. Like I lived across from a park, so on my window I could see, the park, and you could see people sitting out there. But there used to be hundreds of people just on the lawns with their dogs, just with friends, family. It was like a holiday when the sun was out. And so being able to experience that and see that, I'm like, wow, the Bahamas is a beautiful place. And I see why so many people want to come and live in the Bahamas and be here and visit us. So all of that kind of motivated me to go to the UK. Getting that experience helped me to understand the beauty of what we have. So that all of that kind of shaped my experience and explained why I wanted to come back home and also make a contribution.
Wow, so you were in Melting Pot, Manchester. I studied abroad in Melting Pot, Atlanta, Georgia, and then went abroad to Beijing, China. I've always believed, yeah, I went all the way there. But I've always believed that when you open yourself up to learning different cultures and having different experiences, it develops your capacity for empathy. What do you think about that?
Oh, definitely. I think, and I, I haven't shared this story with much people, but I remember when I went to get, I went to an ATM, and I remember seeing the level of homelessness, and there were, persons they would sleep in in their sleeping bags. But I remember this one day, it was like maybe 3 degrees. And there was this guy, he was in this sleeping bag, and he was with his son. And they were outside of the ATM machine. I mean, it was very cold. And I remember looking at him, and he had this flashlight in his hand and this book. And he was just reading to his son, for him to go to sleep. And I just stood there, and I'm like, wow, this is, that really just touched my heart. And, there were so many people in that situation. And I just thought about home. And it made me, it made me realize how, to some extent, believe it or not, that we are blessed people. And when you think about those places, those things don't come to your mind. So it really expanded my mind around the way we think about the world. And even coming home now, I have a greater sense of empathy. But I also understand how blessed we are as a nation. And that's not to say that, homelessness exists everywhere, in many places across the world. But that one moment in time really made me think about the world so much more differently than I originally thought about it.
Yeah, and it's good to go abroad so that you can see what obtains in other communities, in other countries, because that also helps to impact the way in which you respond as a citizen, not only in your own country, but a citizen of the world. You're listening to University Drive, folks. Our guest is Kiran Smith, a UB alum and president and CEO of Wani Luthra Foundation. We'll take our first break and be back after this.
Are you ready to take your knowledge or career to new heights? Don't wait to invest in your future. Do it now. How? Earn a professional development certificate from University of the Bahamas. Whether you're looking to enhance your leadership abilities, sharpen your technical skills, or explore a new field entirely, our Continuing Education and Lifelong Learning Center has the ideal course for you. We offer single-phase electrical, ethics and procurement, accounting for entrepreneurship, stop managing, start leading, dynamic presentations, digital marketing, superior customer service, and justice of the peace. We even have courses on smartphone photography, TikTok videos, defensive driving, and interacting with difficult people. Or open the door to new languages with English as a second language, conversational Chinese, and Spanish in the workplace. Our instructors are experts in their fields and they're here to support you every step of the way. Call us at 302-4449. Enroll today.
Welcome back, everyone, to University Drive. I'm Tamika Lundy, and our guest is UB alum and president and CEO of One Eleuthera Foundation, Mr. Kieron Smith. Kieron, you travel from North to South Eleuthera, and you can have different experiences. But at the same time, it's an island where I believe that the people have a big heart and a desire to thrive. What is your sense of this land called freedom? What do you love about it? What gives you the most hope about it?
To be able to see communities come together to solve problems in their community, I think is amazing. The people here, you know, it's beautiful. It's friendly. And I see why so many people from across the world want to come to Eleuthera. Eleuthera is truly the land of freedom. I think in speaking with a lot of people who've moved here, everybody that I've spoken to so far has said when they moved to Eleuthera, they felt a sense of home. They felt a sense of place, that this was a space, the energy in Eleuthera just was like no other. A lot of people, I think, sometimes also come to rebuild their lives. And I see Eleuthera is the land of freedom. It's the land of redemption. It's the land of connectivity. And to be able to come here, and it's a sense of tranquility. What I love about this island is I have a 25-minute drive from home here to Rock Sound at work. And in the mornings when I make that drive, it's, you know, some people may say, hey, that's a long drive, but I love it. To drive the road and see the beautiful landscape, the beautiful beaches, because Eleuthera is so narrow. And so you pretty much get to see a lot of both sides of the island, depending on where you're at. But the beautiful landscape, the lessened traffic, the beautiful people, the problem solvers, I think that makes Eleuthera a beautiful place to be. You know, I know we have, for example, an airport in North Eleuthera that has its challenges, very small to some extent, and they're trying to rebuild the airport. But Eleuthera is the number two destination in the Bahamas right now as of 2020. And I keep asking myself this question. I said, every year, so many people come here just to visit. And part of it is also, you know, to travel to Harbor Island. A lot of people have second homes in that area, as well as in the South as well. But when you ask yourself, what makes people travel to this airport, regardless of what their experience is there, you know, regardless of their experiences there, they always find a way to come back. And a lot of them, you know, find a way to make this their second home or even their main or primary home. And I think Eleuthera gives people that sense of tranquility, that sense of freedom, that sense of belonging. Without it, everything has its challenges, but for the most part, this is truly the land of freedom and peace.
You talk about the airport, and I thought immediately, I said to myself, Well, you know how Miami is a close cousin of the Bahamas, and we go there regardless.
Right.
We experience turbulence, we still going there, right? We still
Right,
going there.
right.
So, I mean, you know, you come to the beautiful land of freedom and the beauty and the culture and the people of Eleuthera. You got to go through the airport, then so be it. You got to endure, but hey,
You're right.
you got to reach your Miami, right?
You're right. You're right.
Yeah. So, what for you? Where does Eleuthera hold the most potential for not only growth, but resilience?
You know, it's so many parts to talk about, but right now, what we're seeing, particularly in the southern part of Eleuthera, you know, I think the northern part and with Harbour Island, you know, that continues to grow and that continues to have a lot of development there. But in the south, you're seeing a lot of new developers moving into the space. Also in Central Eleuthera, particularly in Governor's Harbour, there's a lot of developers. For example, you have Jack's Bay is trying to launch their project this year. We have the Cotton Bay is launching their Ritz-Carlton Reserve. We have a number of developers, like I say, moving into the space. But there's so much that's happened over the last, I would say, 3 years since, or 3 or 4 years since I've moved here. The landscape has changed so much. There's more people on the island. You can see within the vehicles. I remember waking up one morning and I had about 7, 8 cars in front of me. And I'm like, what is going on in this place? This is a traffic jam.
Traffic jam
But
at 70 cars.
because
Wow.
for the most part, there's one main road, Queens Highway. And so if one person driving slow on that, you have put 7, 8 cars in front of you, you know, everybody pretty much taking their time till they can overtake or whatever the measure it is they may take. But you know, Eleuthera is booming, particularly in the south, also in central Eleuthera. There's a lot of potential in more job opportunities, I would say. There's more opportunities. Even with us at One Eleuthera addressing the food security, some of the food security issues in terms of granting access to affordable produce, also looking at training opportunities for persons to have them ready for these job opportunities. There is so much opportunity, so much potential. Of course, that comes with its challenges, like the infrastructural challenges with all this development that's happening. But in terms of resilience, you know, Eleuthera is one of the major islands that reflects sustainability. And I think that's something that we can be proud of. And I would say pretty much in South Eleuthera, you see a lot of development. In Central Eleuthera, there's a lot of development. We're even seeing a little bit of a housing crisis since so many people have moved here. It's hard to find housing. And so that's another a problem that can be solved by an entrepreneur, by a developer, by persons in the community. And there's so much potential across the board.
Sounds very hopeful. I read with interest the mission of One Eleuthera being to transform communities into thriving, successful, and scalable models of sustainable development and progressive change. What does that look like on the ground and through partnerships and collective action?
What I think it looks like, and we start at home, we start on our campus. So, for example, One Eleuthera would have launched, and you may be familiar with Sean Ingram, he's the founder and past president and CEO. Sean was really a visionary. And when we speak about that, we speak about the campus that we have called the Center for Training and Innovation. This is where we do a lot of our training, vocational, and technical areas. And so on our campus, we've been able to collaborate with a number of persons across the communities to really drive what we're doing from a sustainability standpoint. We've also partnered with Ministry of Tourism, for example, to do like the art and food festivals that's coming up very shortly. You'll see that soon. We also had programming. So being able to provide vocational and technical training in the culinary areas, in the carpentry, in agriculture, and to do that from Saudi Lutra and to do that up to Harbour Island, from central of pretty much from south straight to north, to be able to do that, to partner with local stores and restaurants and hotels to make produce accessible and affordable to Bohemians who may not be able to afford it on a regular basis, to be able to just create those elements. We believe in teaching persons how to empower themselves, and that's why we put a lot of emphasis on training. And so I think those are just some examples of how we've done that. I mean, we've partnered with local government, we've partnered with other agencies to really develop robust programming. So, for example, we would have done a lot of work in after Dorian as well to provide relief. The persons from Grand Bahama and Abaco, people have always asked about our model, and what we're also working on is a nonprofit accelerator program to provide support to other nonprofits and to share our model so it could be replicated in other places. So I think Wanilusa has been able to really create a sustainable system, especially around education, being able to provide these trainings pretty much at relatively no cost, for them to have scholarship opportunities to, I think about our carpentry students. If you look at our retreat hotel, you'll see that all of the furniture in those rooms were built by students. You think about the restaurant, our students are able to do their culinary internships or apprenticeships in that area. So being able to create that kind of system around education, around environmental sustainability, around our heritage, being able to do like the restoration of some of our historic sites in the past. And so it's a lot of projects that we're able to collaborate with other agencies, other persons, other organizations on. And I think it's something that we should be proud of, being able to teach kids how to swim, which is a critical life-saving skill, especially we learned that after Dorian, with those persons that came over and that we pretty much helped and supported over that period. But there's so many ways from partnering with nurses. I mean, I could go on and on, but you know, being able to plan and be able to strengthen and connect our communities in that way, where we're helping persons to really learn how to fish, teaching them how to fish, and we're empowering them and giving them access. I think that's the most important thing. So being able to do that has been an amazing thing.
To hear the conviction and the passion that you're speaking with is good to hear. And it seems like the experiences and training that you've had really align with where you are now and the vision and mission of your organization.
Yeah, it's, you know, we have two kind of missions. So Center for Training and Innovation is our accredited training institution. That's the organization that has, you know, the training farm, training restaurant, training hotel on property. It's 50 acres, and we pretty much call this our training lab. And it's a space for students to innovate. So CTI's mission is solely geared towards getting people ready for the workforce, for entrepreneurship, and also in terms of social development. So there's a lot of historic work that's been done with CTI in that sense, helping students to open bank accounts, helping them to get passports and register to some of the first groundwork that was done when it was established in 2016. I see Wanilutra, our mission is also broader in the sense that we're able to really connect more with organizations, people as well, but being able to provide community grants, being a little bit more broader in our mission, I think there's so much synergy to be able to connect the community in that sense, that we were able to for both OEF and CTI, both our organizations, because we pretty much manage both organizations, but it's been amazing to see how our mission have been able to drive a lot of work that's also contributed to national development.
Indeed. It's not every day that you see young, talented, ambitious Bahamians going back to the family islands and flourishing. But we're seeing more and more of it, I think. How have your experiences influenced your approach to leadership of Wanilutu?
Are you referring to in terms of coming back to Eleuther?
And coming back to Eleuthera and the experiences that you've had before that, and how you've infused those experiences into how you approach leadership of Wanilutu.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think the even if, you know, it's interesting. I think my experiences at UB really helped me so much in leadership. And I even think about working with a group of students. You know, when you're putting a team together, there's so many elements, and I don't want to compare it to students, but just the lessons learned of being able to manage in student government, being able to negotiate to some extent with senior administrators, to serve on a board at UB and understand board governance and the importance of that. Being able to translate that in my leadership with the organization has been instrumental. And I think those experiences really help shape the way I see, you know, our vision, the way I see our team. I would say, for example, being able to serve on UB board and being able to read those briefing notes and understand the importance of the numbers, understanding the importance of vision and mission, and being able to collaborate with a group of people to be able to get something done despite differences in opinions, you know, that has helped me a lot.
That's a win. That's a win.
So one of the things I think I've learned is that, you know, it's differences of opinions. You know, it's fine. It's good to have that. You know, it helps strengthen an idea. It helps to strengthen a concept. But being able to get everybody to move towards a common goal is something that's really helped me, I think, in that sense, for sure.
Okay, well, we're having a conversation about leadership, conviction, community development, collective action. Our guest is Kieron Smith. We'll take another break and return to you all after this.
Chapter One Bookstore is proud to serve the students, faculty, and staff of the University of the Bahamas and the community at large. We are the premier choice for the purchase of university textbooks and supplies, and UB logo apparel, paraphernalia, and gifts. We also carry a wide variety of school supplies, learning aids, and leisure books. Visit our copy center for all of your printing, copying, and binding needs. Chapter One Bookstore is located on the ground floor of the Michael H. Eldon Complex on University Drive. Shop with us on Monday through Saturday. You can contact us at 397-2650 or email at chapter1@ub.edu.bs. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Chapter One Bookstore. Chapter One, the premier choice.
Here we are back on University Drive. We're talking with Kieron Smith, a UB alum and president and CEO of Wanilutra Foundation. Kieron, you wrote an opinion editorial, I believe it was last November, where you offered what I thought was a very interesting perspective on making room for young leaders. You noted that the lack of proper succession planning by current leaders leaves the next generation less equipped for the responsibilities that lie ahead. You coined embracing young leadership as something beyond necessity, but a strategic move that ensures a vibrant, forward-looking future. Question, in the grand scheme of all we face as a society, and you can look at the perils, the global threats, the threats to our existence, what we are at risk of, what are we at risk of if we do not substantively address the matter of making room for young leaders?
You know, I think one of the things that we're at risk of is loss of knowledge and information. You know, I think there's so much that can be achieved if a lot more of the leadership see themselves as bridge builders between both generations or different forms. I think even in the way we communicate, I think that one of the things that we'll be at risk of is loss of knowledge. As well as, you know, when we talk about national development, you know, that there always needs to be some form of succession planning. You know, I think of myself in this role and being able to work with Sean over the last few years before my transition, you know, was very helpful because I was able to learn so much about the organization, learn so much about, you know, the vision of where we were trying to go. And to be able to work with him, I was the COO, and to be able to execute a lot of those ideas in that period, you know, I learned a lot, and it actually helped prepare me for the role that I'm in now. And I think it's so important that leaders now think beyond themselves. And I think that's, you know, oftentimes when we think about transition, it's often too late. I think leaders should always be thinking about that person or persons who they have in mind that can always continue the success, to also learn from the failures. One of the things that I've learned is that, you know, I don't want to make the same mistakes that somebody made already before me. You know, I'd rather you tell me the story and I learn from it. And, you know, if I'm going to make a mistake, it needs to be some new mistakes. It don't need to be the same mistakes being made over and over. That's insanity. So being able to get leaders to understand that, hey, you know, young people, a lot of young people aren't looking to just take your jobs or looking for some kind of window for some opportunity. I think young people, they want to be groomed. Or when I say groomed, I mean they want to understand the dynamics. You know, tomorrow's never promised, and so if something happens to somebody, you want to know that you've made plans for succession planning and for the thing that you love, whether it's country, whether it's your organization, whether it's your business, that you know if you're not here, that it will only grow, that it will only move forward from there. And so instead of thinking it as, hey, I'm losing ground, I'm losing power, I'm losing everything around me, see it as I'm growing my organization, I'm growing my business, I'm growing the country, and this is going to be better for my kids, this is going to be better for the next generation.
In that same editorial you wrote, you talked about connecting like our legacy folks, right? Our older folks who've been in the system for a while. I call them legacy change agents, with emerging ones through mentorship and support. What do you envision that looks like across sectors?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I've grew to love in this role is the ability, you know, I have board members who I can pick up the phone and call and say, hey, this, let me know your thoughts on this thing. You know, I'd love to get some feedback from you on this. I'm thinking about this idea. Let me know your thoughts. And I think being able to pick up the phone, call these persons, for them to give you their feedback, their guidance, and to take it all in, you know, that's a big support. That's a big help, because, you know, a lot of persons have a lot of life experiences that you can learn from. But even when it comes to mentorship, I always believe that you should always have persons or somebody you can pick up the phone and call and get some good advice and sound at that. So I'm thinking, you know, having that ability to have access to be able to utilize that in that sense, whether it's picking up the phone and calling them, whether it's paying them a visit, whether it's them grooming you into a role or getting you ready for a role, whatever it is across sector, I think persons in leadership should always be thinking about who can I give some guidance to that can help take it forward. I remember coming to Wani Lusra, and I remember Sean saying to me, he says, Kieron, you know, I'm preparing for succession. And he says, I want this to go to the next level. That's really, I remember him telling me Thursday, and he's like, Kieron, you know, I think you're from Elusa. It's an amazing opportunity to really be a part of something great. But think about that. And, you know, to hear that, to have that invitation, to understand what he was trying to do with the organization, it was encouraging. It was, and, you know, I never knew, you know, 3-4 years later that, you know, I would be in this position. But, you know, it just speaks to how an organization can evolve and grow over time with the right succession and planning, and also with the right guidance from so many other people who are also contributing to that vision and mission.
You know, what Sean Ingram said to you, to me, sounds like an affirmation, not only of your potential, but of your expertise. I mean, for a young person to hear words said that, yes, you can make a difference. You are valuable. We need you. You can do this, right? Imagine how that would look coming consistently across a continuum of growth.
You spot on. You know, that gives you a different kind of motivation. That gives you a different kind of inspiration. And I think a lot more young people, if they had different opportunities, and it all boils down to barriers and access. So being able to break down those barriers, and have access to opportunities, I think a lot of people would be happy and would open themselves up to that. It's just a matter of more leaders making room for young persons to have a seat at the table.
What would it take for us to have more young people moving back to the family islands and building the Bahamas from different aspects, not in New Providence, but in the family islands where we could create this rising tide, right, of growth that doesn't emanate from, in a huge way, from one point. Yeah. I'm younger than you, right? So what would it take for people like me to move, to move back to the family islands to build? What do we need to do that we're not doing now?
I think it's what I've been trying to get more and more young people, from Elusa to come back home. I've been trying to reach out as much as I can in that sense. And we've, you know, put out a number of roles. And I've been hoping to see more persons who want to move back to the family islands come back home. I think it all boils down to opportunities. I moved to Elusa and I see so much opportunities for entrepreneurship, so many opportunities for growth, for a better quality of life for your kids. And I think what we haven't done enough is share what life can be like on the family islands and how it could be something that's great that would attract people who want to come to the family islands. Oftentimes you think about the family islands, you know, you think about, hey, there's nothing to do. And, you know, sometimes that is a struggle, but I've always told people, hey, why not, if it's a struggle, why not create something that will make it worthwhile? And I think we have to pitch the family islands as more of a space for opportunity and less about challenge. And, you know, we've always heard about the challenges of the family islands, but I think if we talk more about the opportunities, when we think about entrepreneurship, Elusa right now is in a housing crisis. There's persons who may have commonage land, for example, in Lucer, that can build, that can help to address the issues of housing, that can get rental income. There's opportunities in entrepreneurship to create more fun things to do on the island. With the growth of the economy, with more people moving here, I say there's going to be more opportunities for entrepreneurs to maybe address the transportation issues. To maybe I think speaking from it from a place of opportunity versus a place of challenge, I think that would attract a lot more people, you know. And I think people, if they know they can live a comfortable and satisfying and a life of fulfillment on the family islands, a lot more people would move here.
Sounds good. Sounds good. We're at the beginning of 2024. What would a successful 2024 look like for you regarding not only One Eleuthera Foundation, but its impact on the communities of Eleuthera at the end of this year?
For me, at the end of every year, I identify a word that I focus on for that year. So in 2022, in December, my word was leadership. And interestingly enough, you know, it came to fruition with becoming the CEO of One Eleuthera. My word in December for this year was growth. And that's growth in every aspect of my life, of personal growth, you know, professional growth, spiritual growth. And I think for me, one of the things I would like to see more of an impact on the communities is one, us being able to create more apprenticeship and internship opportunities for young people who want to get into the hospitality industry. I think with all the new developments that's happening, one of our biggest challenges on the family islands is, I think, the human capital challenge. And so being able to see more people have those kind of opportunities. Also, for me, finding my work-life balance. I do tend to push very hard. And everybody tells me about it, but...
Yeah, find that balance. Find the balance.
But being able to find work-life balance and put more time into, you know, my personal life, and then also just to grow more spiritually, I find that when your spiritual soul is filled, you know, I think everything else kind of follows you, you know, physically, mentally, it just all falls in place. So being able to grow in all those different areas for me is, you know, a personal goal. Being able to see people on the team to grow in their roles and to grow in and their also their personal aspects of life is something I'd be happy to see. And I just want to see more persons across the island have more opportunities, more access, more growth. And I think if we can do that as an organization to give people hope and to give them access and opportunities, you know, to see that flourish. You know, we had a Harper Island Trade School and we partnered with Wake Forest University. And we had our alumni pretty much work with the group of students and a lead professor in ideation for our students to work with those group of students in Harper Island and then be able at the end of that week to pitch, you know, their ideas for funding for their existing businesses, you know, and be able to spread the word across, you know, with persons from different walks of life, to be able to walk into a space and do that. And I remember one of our supporters and partners in the trade school saying, "Hey, Kieran, I want to support some of these ideas." To be able to create that kind of access and opportunities for people is an amazing thing. And that's one of the things that I definitely want to see is more access, more opportunities for people across the island.
Wow, time flies when you're having fun and good conversation. We are winding down, and in our last few minutes, I think that We are in one of the most potential-filled eras to thrive and to flourish. With the explosion in technology, with artificial intelligence, with the emerging opportunities that are coming into play, with the focus on being environmentally sustainable, and for us to focus our attentions on climate action so that we are not eroding this world, this earth, because we only have one to live on. What is your advice to young people, to middle-aged people, to older people, to anyone? What's your advice for how we have to live in this moment?
My advice would be that in whatever it is that we do, that we always keep, you know, that at the forefront. Even for us, I think about the foundation, for example. Even when we look at our buildings, we keep in mind solar technologies. We were able to bring one of the latest technologies in terms of a cooling house, which is the first of its kind in the Bahamas. And one of the things that we talked about is its resilience, being able to be resilient in the midst of a hurricane, being able to rainwater catchment systems. We could store up to 1 million gallons of water on our campus from rainwater, and our tanks have been filled for the last 3 to 6 months. We have solar technologies on some of our buildings. I think even when it comes to investments, one of the crazy things I told a person, like I remember Dr. Adele Thomas doing studies on, you know, climate change and some of the islands and places that would be underwater within the next 20 to 30 years. And I've been trying to pinpoint what are some of those islands, because there's going to be prime opportunities for young people to think about where to build. Because when that time comes, I want to be able to be in a space where I could be safe and maybe be able to provide opportunities and access to persons during that time. So, you know, thinking about those kind of opportunities when we build, when we invest, when we, I would say, even in our other walks of life, when we think about those things, I think those should always, climate resilience should always be at the forefront, because we are the most vulnerable people when it comes to that. And so even when I was looking at some property that I'd like to acquire, you know, I always think, hey, is this elevated? How flooding is going to affect this? Where's my water source going to come from? So just being able to think about those things and keep that at the forefront, I think is going to be important for a lot of persons and a lot of young people who see themselves here for the long term.
Very good notes to end on. Thank you so much for spending time with us, Kieran. We'd like it if you could come back at some point in the future. We will definitely be in touch. We wish you all the best. You've been listening to University Drive. We're in season 10, folks. Don't miss any of our future episodes. I've been your host, Tamika Lundy. Join us again next week for another informative episode of University Drive.
University Drive is a production of the Office of University Relations at University of the Bahamas. All rights reserved.